And welcome to Food for Thought. I'm Dee Anderson.
And I'm Laura Mangone.
Hey,
how are you?
Really weird taping the show at 6:30 in the morning.
I know it is, but it's kind of nice. It's quiet up in the house. It's dark outside. Well, starting to get a little light. It's kind of cool. So we had a very historic week. Should we talk about that a little bit?
Sure. It's still setting in how relieved I feel on a daily basis. Like I know that, you know, the liar's gone, but the lies will prevail. The liar's gone, but the lies will live on. And
it's kind of sad. It seems like literally half of our population have been brainwashed.
I'll tell you what. I think you know the trickle down theory of economics.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
What does work is the trickle-down theory with misinformation. So people like the supremacists and the QAnon, I feel like they fill our space with all of this crap. And what eventually trickles down are just sort of filtered lies that people start to perceive as true.
Right.
And they don't realize that what they're getting it from is a really bad source that's adulterated and
fake. I mean, it's so funny that he is the one that started the fake news, you know, just that terminology. And he's the one that literally and figuratively started fake news.
Now, speaking of fake news, they mentioned as I feel needs to be sort of paramount moving forward. I mean, I know we have so many things to deal with. Biden's just inherited like the worst job market, you know, in history and all
everything.
This stuff. And when things don't go perfectly, you know, all the Republicans are going to be screaming like, oh, look, you know, what have you done? Well, he didn't do any. Let's just like remind ourselves that he walked into this.
Exactly.
I am fascinated. Back to my point about what I think needs to be paramount, not who cares what I think, but I think it's the Fairness Act or something that was created in the 70s that held news channels responsible for what they said.
Right.
And somebody has got to create something to monitor or to gauge social media and the information that they share.
Because absolutely. One of the speeches at the inauguration was about truth. Like, we've got to bring back the truth, you know, truth in reporting, the truth in...
Yeah, there's still people out there that think that, you know, Hillary Clinton had a sex ring. You know, it's like...
Or Democrats or Satan worshipers or, you know, pick
cannibals.
Any horrifying...
I mean,
stupid
and then
at the very least,
so, you know, even if they don't think that Hillary Clinton is has a porn ring or whatever, a child molester or whatever, what has been accepted as truth is that she's just, you know, evil and power hungry, and that's all she cares about. And that is not true.
I agree.
The people are already criticizing, like, oh, you know, Biden, he did a mask mandate, you know, for federal buildings. And what, there's a picture of him 5 minutes later in, you know, the Lincoln building or whatever it was, and he didn't have a mask on. Oh, you know, who cares? You know, it's like, we're talking about, first of all, there's no one standing around him.
Right.
He's absolutely alone. I think what it's intended for is, you know, when the public comes in, that they have to wear one. But they'll just take any chance to rip them apart.
It was interesting yesterday seeing Dr. Fauci talking about, you know, the rollout of the vaccines and how literally the Trump administration did nothing, absolutely zero, for this rollout. I mean, there was a correspondent who has been part of, I think he said, 5 or 6 administrations, where he said that the transition teams between the two administrations were so unorganized, didn't have proper notes, didn't have, like, it literally was a clusterfuck on passing over information. And he had zero plan for this vaccine, which Dr. Fauci was like, I cannot tell you how refreshing it is. I mean, this was his direct quote. This is so refreshing that people are actually not criticizing science, like fact.
Right.
It's just mind-boggling.
Fauci was like, wasn't he, like, his whole aura is, like, giddy now? Like,
yeah, I mean, he's a goofy scientist. Yes, right. Absolutely. But can you imagine? He said, you know, this whole previous administration was just, you know, not taking any of this seriously, and there was no plan in effect. And look at all the people that have died. I mean, it's freaking frightening. So in any event, you know, as we've just gone through the most historic inauguration, the young poet laureate was just amazing. I mean, that's not the last. I just heard she had, like, three books just came out. Like, she's literally written three books that just came out.
22.
She's yeah, 22 years old.
When I think
old.
Of her and I compare her to my 20-year-old daughter, I mean, I couldn't talk about a 180. I mean, my daughter is like, wah! You know, she's kooky and doesn't stand for anything and, you know.
It was amazing. She said that, you know, a big part of her speech was dedicated to what happened a couple of weeks ago at the Capitol. And, you know, she said she had started working on the speech prior to that. But when that happened, she really, you know, picked up her pen and got back to work and included. I thought it was incredible. It was very moving. I actually listened to it like three times. Just amazing. I also heard sort of interesting. I didn't realize that Oprah Winfrey had provided jewelry and I believe the suit that Maya Angelou wore when she did her poem at Obama's inauguration. And, Oprah gave her, did you see that ring that she had on?
Yes.
It was a ring that she had designed for this young lady, and it was a caged bird, and it was sort of a tribute to Maya Angelou.
Wow.
And she also, like, provided jewelry, and, you know, she sort of found this poet, and she was the one that introduced her to Dr. Jill Biden. That's how she ended up there. I thought that was kind of a cool.
Yeah,
and that ring, I kept looking at that ring. She was, you know, it was pretty prominent. But wonderful. What a beautiful tribute.
It was, not to slip back into darkness, but I was, one of the things that I'm, now that things have shifted course so severely, QAnon, first of all, Proud Boys and a lot of those white supremacist organizations have absolutely turned their backs on Trump. See, this is what I was worried about. Well, I was worried about the opposite, that they would continue to praise him and this whole thing would just go on and on and on and he might run again and all this stuff.
Right.
But apparently the opposite is coming true. They're all like, look at him like, what did you do? You dropped the ball. How could you? They feel betrayed by him. QAnon believers are devastated.
I would think they would all have been, like, everyone that was present would have felt betrayed when he came out with the video saying, you know, none of my supporters would do this and none of my supporters are, you know.
Right.
I mean, whereas 24 hours before, 48 hours before, he was, like, urging them on. So.
Right. I mean, I still don't think that he didn't tell anybody to storm the Capitol. You know, he could argue that, listen, I just wanted a presence down there. I didn't want.
Well,
but of course, the way
his terminology was, we're marching down to the Capitol and we're not going to get anything quietly. We need to be aggressive, you know, so that I think that it is incitement.
Well, we shall see. We shall see. But at least.
And we definitely have to just at least mention we have our first female Black, Asian, not only female, vice president, which is kind of cool in our lifetime, finally.
I can't wait to have, there's no one, I've also decided that there's no one more likable than Doug.
Yeah.
Kamala's husband.
He's awesome, isn't he?
There's no one more likable, but of course, you know, wait till somebody starts ripping him apart too, because—
I'm sure.
You know.
Absolutely. So I didn't know, I was curious, do you know where the vice president lives? I didn't know this. I looked it up. You know, because there's all the talk about moving into the White House. And I was curious, like, do they have a wing? Does the vice president have a wing in the White House?
No, I always knew they had a separate—
Yeah, they live president. Like 2 miles away from the White House on the U.S. Naval property that's owned by the U.S. Navy. And I think it's called Conservatory Way or something like that. And it's this big old beautiful Victorian home that I think is 130 years old. Kind of cool.
Yeah, nice digs for the
Pickles. Absolutely. So we were living through a very historic time.
Did you register for your vaccine?
I registered almost a month ago. Yeah, okay. I'm quote unquote on the list. Okay. But I've been checking back and I've been, you know, when I first registered, I just got a confirmation saying, yes, you're on the list. And then someone emailed me and said, you know, go back and register again because then it will give you what phase you're in. So I did. Okay. And it said, I'm in phase 1B. And I have checked back, you know, at different, you know, different sites. There's even CVSs that are giving out vaccines. So I'm on a bunch of different lists. I have to say, New Jersey, I think, is a little more screwed up than New York is. New York, although everybody is running out of the vaccine, everyone has been, you know, showing up for appointments that they made and being turned away because they ran out of vaccine. The chief medical correspondent on ABC, Jennifer Ashton, said that everyone should be checking back regularly because they pull out a certain amount of vaccines for the appointments they have for the day. And if somebody doesn't show up or somebody gets canceled or for whatever circumstances, they may have extra vaccine that needs to be administered that day. Right. You know, this is like a timed thing. It's a time sensitive situation. Right. So New York is a little bit more organized. Certainly there's many, many new, you know, big sites that are opening, like the Javits Center and stadiums and blah, 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 blah. But I've got Uncle Joe on like 8 different lists, hoping I can get him in. You know, his doctor has said, even if you have to go to a huge venue rather than a small, you know, doctor's office or urgent care place, try to get it as soon as possible. It's going to be interesting. I mean, this rollout, I think I just saw a New York Times blast this morning that said, you know, Biden has now signed into, this is top priority, getting everybody vaccinated. I just think it's going to be so confusing because there's so many people that have already received their first vaccine. Now they need to get their, if they're doing the Pfizer or Moderna, not the J&J, which is supposedly just a one shot instead of a two shot. You know, all these people that have already gotten their first shot are now going to be queuing up to get their second shot while there's millions of people still waiting on their first shot. It's kind of a mess.
Yeah, I'm trying not to worry about it.
Not to worry about it, although I have been literally spending probably at least 1 to 2 hours a day going over all of the sites that I have Uncle Joe listed on. And seeing if there's any openings, if they've opened their calendar. So it's going to be a process, and it's all over the news. It's a process everywhere. There's got to be a federal, and I think I didn't read thoroughly what this Times blast was this morning, but there's got to be a federal system here. This can't just be like, you know, the COVID testing situation where every state was doing every different, you know, whichever way they wanted.
I wonder what the outcome would have been had we taken this approach, you know, like a federal mandate approach from day one.
I think it would have been drastic. I think it would have been drastically different. And this was one of the things that Fauci said yesterday, is that, you know, this herd immunity is only going to work if, like, over, I think you said 75% of the population get the vaccine. I know a ton of people who are like, oh, I'm not getting it. Oh, I'm, you know, are adamantly opposed.
So I don't know a ton of people, but I do know some people who are opposed. We should probably, we're running out of time, so let's just talk about the food things that we're going to be talking about.
I know. So coming up, we have delicious fish tacos that I had last night. I made an Asian dish that was really quick and easy. And also I saw referenced one very similar on the, you know, every Sunday, I think New York Times comes out with, you know, what to cook this upcoming week.
Yeah.
And it was, they had something very similar. So I'll talk about that. And you have?
I have a vegan tikka masala recipe. Mm-hmm. And I also have, reached out to my vegan chef friend, Ross.
Uh-huh.
I've officially reached out to him to get some Zoom vegan cooking classes going.
Oh, cool.
And I also have to talk about a crockpot tikka masala that I'm planning.
Nice.
Dinner that we had last night that I resurrected. I sort of recycled something from the freezer that I didn't even know what it was when I was defrosting it.
Oh my gosh. And I just did, it's funny you're saying this. I did the same exact thing. So tonight I'm making stuffed green peppers because I established that what was in this frozen container was basically stuffing from green peppers.
Right. Why do I forget to label stuff after this many years? I don't know. But anyway, when we come back, we will be talking all food.
We will be talking all food all day. We'll be back.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Are you over the age of 60 and been diagnosed with lung cancer? If so, you and your family may qualify for a cash award. Our experienced attorneys are standing by to evaluate whether you have a lung cancer claim that qualifies you for a cash award. The consultation is absolutely free, and there is no risk and no money out of pocket. We only receive a fee when we secure you and your family a settlement. 250,000 people are diagnosed with lung cancer every year. You're not alone in this battle. We can help make sure that you and your family are financially safe and that medical expenses are covered. Again, if you've been diagnosed with lung cancer and are over age 60, call now. Don't delay. There are deadlines for filing claims. We're standing by 24/7. Call us at 1-855-398-1754. 1-855-398-1754. That's 1-855-398-1754.
Attorney Advertising. William Stephacker Jr. is the attorney responsible for this ad. Main office, Granton, Pennsylvania. May not be available in all states.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Generic Sildenafil allows you to save up to $650 on Viagra. Why pay name brand prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get the same results for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 50 generic Sildenafil pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $750 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill for the name brand again. Get generic Sildenafil for less than $3 a pill. Call 800-590-0443 today and save up to $650 and get 50 pills for just $99. Generic Sildenafil is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting to take your call now. Call 800-590-0443. That's 800-590-0443. Again, 800-590-0443.
And we're back.
We're back.
Good morning, America.
All right.
I kind of like taping early in the morning.
Me too. I would not mind it if we did it this way.
Maybe we do this from now on, right?
It's nice. I mean, when I was so the listeners don't know, but when we tape the show, it's usually Thursday
afternoon.
So like at 5
after a full day of running around for both of us.
Right. And I get off early on Thursdays, which is nice. I get off at 3 o'clock. I'm home by, 3:45. Uh-huh. And then I kind of get my stuff together and we do the show. So when you texted me that, is there any way we could do it in the morning? And I said, well, I could do 6 a.m. or 6:30 because right. of work. And you said, sure. And I thought, oh, so I have the night free. And it was kind of,
you know,
nice.
What I think we should do it from, I'm still, as recuperating from hip surgery, and between my exercises and physical therapy and having to literally take like a long walk a couple of times a day, I'm done. Right. I'm like, by 4 o'clock, I'm like a freaking geriatric. I'm like, I need a nap.
I haven't had a hip replaced, but I start to hit the wall at the end of the day, and so.
Yeah. Also, because I get up, I have always gotten up early. I mean, I am up well before 5:30 every morning. So I have like a whole day in the morning where I get.
Me too.
My father used to say there used to be a commercial about the Marines. I don't know if it was the Marines or the Navy or some branch of armed forces, where they said, we get more done before 9 a.m. than most people get done all day. My dad used to say, Laura gets more done in her pajamas than most people get done all day. Because I do. I could see that in the morning. So this is awesome. I think we should do this from now on. Anyway, so, back to food.
Yes. Can I talk about my recycled?
Go for it.
Because it was such a success, and it was so funny that I didn't even know what this stuff was. I've really been intent recently, now that I'm not catering anymore. I used to throw away a lot of food because when I was getting ingredients, for a party for 50 or 70 or whatever it was, or dinner party for 10.
Right.
I always wound up with extra food that I was not able to consume,
So I know, but didn't you freeze? See, this is why I have tons of things. Cause same thing, we'll do stuff for parties or I'll cook for Uncle Joe and I have leftovers. So I literally have a million little Ziploc bags in my freezer that are like, part of this and part of that. And with instructions on them, like, to finish this dish, do this.
Well, I just got lazy,
right.
So if I had, let's have an example. Like, I had a 5 pound bag of red potatoes, for example, and I don't eat a lot of starch. So I would try to, cook them and give them to Don for dinner or whatever. But after a while, and they start to sprout or whatever, they'd go in the garbage. So it was a lot of stuff going in the garbage. And I have to say, even on a level of like recycling and stuff like that, I just got really lazy. And so I've really been determined the past couple of months, and I've made a lot of changes with lessening the amount of plastic I use. We no longer get plastic bottles of seltzer. We have an ongoing supply of seltzer. Now we get the cans.
Right.
I'm switched to shampoo bars for washing my hair, so I won't have shampoo bottles anymore.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I've switched to laundry sheets or pods, so I don't have big jugs. So I've been doing that. The same is true for food. I'm not throwing away anything. So I had what I realized after I defrosted it and started to eat it. And mind you, I was reminded that, when we freeze things, now this was just like it was kind of like a chicken cacciatore that it made with potatoes and sausage.
Yeah.
And we wound up eating all of the chicken and probably most of the sausage, but I had all of this like soup left over. So it was a tomato base, and I think I seasoned it with rosemary was the predominant seasoning.
Uh-huh.
Tomatoes, and also had Kalamata olives. So I tasted it and I thought, wow, the freezer definitely does some damage, to the flavor, because the flavor was it was flat. The potatoes were a different consistency now that they had been frozen.
Did you have a lot of sauce of it? Cause sauce in it? Cause I find the opposite. I find that would hold well.
There was a lot of sauce in it. It just kind of, I don't know, something happens to it anyway. So I thought, I've had this bag of 3/4 of a pound of bay scallops that I've had forever in the freezer. And I came across a little fish fillet that it was like in a cryovac. which I really had to use up. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to bring this all to a boil and I'm going to dump this shiitake in there and,
Sounds delicious.
It with, garlic bread. And boy, did it come back to life. It was fantastic. And I love the fact that I didn't, that little tub, which I could have very easily thrown away.
Right.
Thinking, what am I going to do with this? And I was determined not to. And we ate it and it was wonderful. And it feels
good. I do a lot of that. I'm cooking, you know, doing stuff at work, or there's a little bit of a sauce left over, or, you know, making something for Uncle Joe, and I've got just a little bit of something left over. I'm really good at recycling and renewing. And
I wish more of my personal chef clients were like that, because I've had clients that they think nothing of throwing away food, or they would get tired of something. Like, let's say I made, you know, something with roasted potatoes and I made a little bit too many. Well, they'll just have, you know, what they wanted for that night. They won't eat the leftovers. They get tired of things and therefore stop eating it. So then when I would go in the following week and I would think, oh, why is this still here? Now I've got to throw it away. They just don't care. They don't want to know. Yeah. They wouldn't want to know that I've just thrown out.
Yeah, that is a shame. I mean, if we could make one recommendation to our listeners, that would be it. Like, if you find yourself, you have something that you don't think in the next couple of days, I'm going to eat all of this, or, you know, your husband's going to get tired of it, or throw it in a Ziploc freezer bag and throw it in the freezer, because it could be another meal. It could be turned into something, added to something, you know, add it to pasta, add it to.
A lot of people just don't get it. Laura,
yeah, I know. It's unfortunate because, you know, think about the food waste that happens in this country. It's kind of sad. There are people starving in, and I'm not going to say in China like my mom used to. There are people starving in the USA.
That's right. That's right.
Well, that sounded good.
Yeah, it was really good. So did you had a similar experience?
I am doing a lot of that, you know, since I've been recuperating. I have not been grocery shopping. Mario's sort of been either bringing stuff home from work, or I'll just tell him to bring a couple of ingredients because I know I have things in the freezer. I mean, quite frankly, even if I didn't go into the freezer where I have out in the garage where I have Uncle Joe's, you know, like food inventory, in my freezer in the kitchen, we literally could exist for probably at least 2 months on the quantity of food that's in there.
Yeah.
I would have to use some pantry items to perk things up or add to items, but I got a lot of stuff in the freezer. So periodically I go, you know, it's like, you know, I'm making something from the freezer. And I was in there yesterday looking, and I have, as I said earlier, I had this Ziploc bag full of stuff that apparently either the label came off of or I just never labeled. In future, and what I've been doing now is on the Ziploc freezer bags, they have this little white section where you can write with a permanent marker. That's my go-to labeling system these days. But I used to use, you know, like Avery address labels. I'd write it on there and stick it on it, whether it was a container or a bag. But they fall off, so that's not a good system. So I had something. I wasn't quite sure what it was. And after, you know, I let it thaw, thinking, well, whatever it is, I'm going to figure out something.
I'm going to eat it. Whatever it is.
Whether I'm eating it just like this or we are, you know, I'm doctoring it up and adding to it. So it turned out to be, which is, you know, when I cook, I always cook too much food. I always cook like I want to have stuff left over in the freezer. Mario and I love leftovers. So generally, even though I'm cooking for two, I'm basically cooking for four. Right. So it turned out to be filling that I had used in stuffed peppers at one point. I could see the peppers in it. I knew the smell of it. I tasted a little bit of it. It had ground turkey or ground chicken in it, but it's not quite as, you know, I thought, again, I'm stuffing four peppers tonight, not just two, but four. I'll probably have leftovers from that. So I also had a little bit of ground turkey. So I took that out. And aside from the peppers for tonight, what I made the other day, because again, I had another little block of ground turkey. I'm so stupid, because when I'm cooking, like, I should go through and say, okay, I'm making this, and look, I've got these I can use up, which I do with certain items, but sometimes things get lost in there. So in the New York Times, I get a New York Times email. I think it's on Sundays, and it just says, you know, what are you cooking this week? And it gives you a couple of suggestions. Why not this? How about this? Blah, blah, blah. This on Tuesday, that on Wednesday. And one of them was this very quick Asian noodle dish, which I have made many times in the past. I mean, it's no big secret. And I had defrosted the ground chicken, and I sauteed a couple of onions, and then I put the ground chicken in, and I used my old-fashioned potato masher to sort of break it up in there. Mm-hmm. I sprinkled a little bit of five spice powder on it, and a little bit of, no, that was pretty much it for the meat and the onions. And meanwhile, I was boiling water and cooking some pasta. And again, in my cupboard, I have dry pastas that are, you know, half a box, a quarter of a box. So I made a little selection of pastas. It was like part linguine, part angel hair. Mm-hmm. So I put the linguine in first, let that go for a couple of minutes. Then I put the angel hair in.
Right.
And then I just mixed it in.
It's called a mélange.
A mélange, exactly. Exactly. It's pretty funny. My mom used to do it, but she'd have not only long pastas, but she'd have short pastas in there too. So it would be like ziti, linguine, and, you know, wagon wheels.
All together, yeah.
All mixed up together. But she knew, you know, the time difference, so she would cook them appropriately.
Right, right.
She'd put them in backwards.
Now I just have a quick couple of questions, because you hit on some things that I've actually, I had made notes on to discuss.
Hang on. Let me finish my recipe. Okay. So I had the onions and the chicken just with a little bit of five spice powder. I had my noodles cooking, my pasta cooking. And then in a pan, I just sauteed some garlic and ginger. I put a little bit of chili paste in. Mm-hmm. I put a little bit of water in because I wanted it a little bit thinner. Then I threw in the chicken and onions and stirred that all around. Then I hit it with a little splash of sesame oil. And then I put the noodles in some of the pasta broth and mixed it up. And it was delicious. It was so delicious.
I'm sure it was.
I mean, so easy, literally. Just, you know, our Asian favorites, just like ginger, garlic, soy, little sesame oil.
Do you know the distinct difference between, and before we started the show, I actually tried to look it up and I couldn't find a side-by-side list of ingredients,
right?
But the distinct differences between five spice powder and garam masala.
Yeah, they're totally different. I mean, they're, you know, well, one's Asian, one's Indian.
Right, but there's a lot of similar, you know,
there are some similarities. I think the five spice has more cumin and cardamom.
Okay.
And I think, I'm sorry, no, backwards, go the other way. The garam masala has more cumin and cardamom.
That sounds more
like it. And yeah. I think the five spice definitely has anise.
Right.
Seeds. I mean, I think those are the predominant flavors that are in there. I think they both have allspice in them. They both both have probably nutmeg in them.
So if I had, I guess what I'm getting at is I realized, and next I'll talk about the tikka masala that I made, both vegan and one I'm planning with chicken.
Right.
But I realized I didn't have any garam masala in the pantry, but I did have five spice, and I thought, okay, I think I vaguely remembered that I can add something to this to make it a little closer.
Yeah, I think I would use five spice, and then I would put more cardamom, and I would put more cumin.
Right.
I think that's pretty much. I mean, that would be interesting to look at. I'll see if on the break I can pull up the differences. Right. Or actually, you know what? I can go and grab. I have both. So I'll grab them and see what the differences are.
So to segue into garam masala, from Five Spice. So I made yesterday, it was the easiest thing, and I'm not sure that it was, I don't think it was truly authentic Indian, but a tikka masala for my vegan client. Uh-huh. And so the recipe called for tempeh cubed, and then you marinate the tempeh in this case in like a cashew yogurt, so a non-dairy yogurt. I didn't have that, so I took oat milk and I added some cashew cream, which now I'm a big fan of.
Yeah.
So it kind of just to thicken it.
Yeah.
And some apple cider vinegar, dried ground ginger, dried garam masala, and cumin, I think.
This sounds very much similar to the murg masala, the butter chicken that I make.
Right.
That's one of the recipes. You put it in like a yogurt and five spice, yogurt and garam masala mixture.
Right. So while you're marinating that, you make the sauce, which is onions, garlic, ginger, a cup of tomato sauce, and pretty much equal parts tomato sauce and coconut milk.
Mm-hmm.
And additionally, you know, more of that garam masala and spices and stuff. And then cook that down. And basically you dump in the tempeh and marinade and all and let it simmer for 15 minutes.
That sounds very much, you know what? I'm sorry, we're running out of time. We're going to wrap this up when we come back.
Yeah, I'll talk about my chicken when we come back.
Okay.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Are you over the age of 60 and been diagnosed with lung cancer? If so, you and your family may qualify for a cash award. We can help make sure that you and your family are financially safe and medical expenses are covered. If you've been diagnosed with lung cancer and are over 60, call 24/7 1-855-398-1754. 1-855-398-1754. Attorney Advertising. William Stephacker Jr. is the attorney responsible for this ad. Main office, Granton, Pennsylvania. May not be available in all states.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Generic Sildenafil allows you to save up to $650 on Viagra. Why pay name brand prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get the same results for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 50 generic Sildenafil pills for just $99. Call 800-590-0443. That's 800-590-0443. Again, 800-590-0443.
Non-attorney paid spokesperson. Could your house go into foreclosure? Are you behind on your mortgage payments? Does it seem like the bank has no interest in helping you save your home, and you feel like you have nowhere to turn for help? Then we have good news for you. Foreclosure Protection Services can help save your home as they specialize in foreclosure assistance. That's all they do. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, being threatened with foreclosure, have been denied a loan modification, or been the victim of a predatory loan, it's critical that you call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-846-3464. Their network of attorneys and their agents are available to speak to you now. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, Foreclosure Protection Services can help stop the foreclosure process. Call today before it's too late. New laws are in effect that may save your home. Call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-846-3464. 800-846-3464. That's 800-846-3464.
And welcome back.
And we're back. So
let's just do this real quick and then you can finish your... So what we just referenced previously was the differences or the common denominators between five spice powder and garam masala are cinnamon and black pepper. The differences are the five spice has ginger, anise, and fennel, and the garam masala has coriander, cumin, and cardamom.
Right.
So you were correct. If you had five spice but not garam masala, you would just add some, basically, you know, in my mind, coriander, cumin, cardamom, all same, pretty much same family.
But if you, even if you just, because it's adulterated with other stuff that is not, you know, they don't share a lot of ingredients. Maybe
they just share the cinnamon.
So, but if you had to substitute five spice for garam masala, I would just add a bunch of cumin and coriander if you had it.
Exactly.
And get it to be a little more similar to garam.
Exactly. The other way around.
Right. So I did this vegan recipe. I can't remember the last time I made tikka masala. If ever, you know, it might just be, it's not one of my go-to dishes. It's not ever been on my catering menu. So,
right.
But what I'm going to do tikka masala today or after work. I'm going to throw it in the crock pot.
Yeah.
I
make it in the crock pot all the time. And it's basically exactly what you said. I mean, sometimes I don't, you know, generally the recipes were for Merg Mirkani, which is like quote unquote butter chicken, which is basically the same thing.
Right.
You can do it two ways. Generally, if I'm sauteing the chicken beforehand, before mm-hmm. I put it in the crock pot, or if I'm not even using a crock pot and I'm just making it in a big pot, I mix the garam masala and yogurt. In your case, you used a little bit of the oat milk and the cashew cream, mm-hmm. but you want something that's, you know, thick and something enveloping it.
Mm-hmm.
With the five spice, with the garam masala. But sometimes I omit that. Sometimes I just put the garam masala if I'm doing it in the crock pot, because I find that the yogurt, also I'm not using cashew cream and I'm not using your mixture. I'm basically using plain Greek yogurt. And it sometimes gets a little, it breaks a bit, you know, when it's in the crock pot for that long without being sauteed or browned first. But basically it's the same thing.
Breaks a bit in what way?
Like a sauce breaks. It curdles a bit because
right.
of the yogurt.
Okay.
So sometimes I don't even use it. Sometimes I just put the five spice powder, and I do this if I'm using thigh, you know, bone in chicken, and I put it in the crock pot, and I put the tomatoes, and I put what I do add, because I think it adds a velvety texture to it and a little bit of flavor, is I sometimes will put, and I think we talked about this once before, because I made a boo-boo when I put coconut cream instead of coconut milk. You remember I put sweet,
right.
but
right.
I fixed it at the end. But so I would put a little bit of coconut milk that just adds a little bit of texture to it. And then after it cooks down, I stir into it some yogurt. At that point, you could do the same. You could put your cashew cream in at that point, just
yogurt.
To finish it and make it a bit creamier. Yeah, it's delicious.
Right, that's a good idea. Because after, so you're saying omit the yogurt if you're going to do slow cook tikka masala.
If you're going to do slow cook, or if you're not going to sear it first. You know, if you're not going to sear the chicken first, because basically that yogurt is – I mean, it's a receptacle to keep, it's making a marinade basically to envelop the protein with the garam masala, but you can do that without that creaminess. When it's cooking in a slow pot, you know, that yogurt is doing the same thing that flour would do if you were searing meat before you made a stew. You know, it's a thickening agent.
Right.
But when you did, I did it once in the crock pot and I brought it back at the end, but it was like a little bit curdled, you know, it had broken, the sauce had broken a bit.
Yeah, I think I might do that. It's not necessary to.
It's not when it's all, and I also put carrots in it. Like I put other vegetables in there. I put onions, I put carrots, sometimes I put cabbage
mm-hmm.
To, you know, just pump it up that it's not just the chicken. Sometimes I throw greens in towards the end. I've mm-hmm. done it with like collard greens or spinach.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I throw zucchini in like halfway through. Cause so then it's sort of becoming more of a curry, you know, with other vegetables and whatnot.
Right.
But I think that would be delicious, especially when you use your cashew cream to finish it with.
Right.
You know, it would give it that velvety feeling.
Right.
Yum. That sounds delish.
Now I have, a couple more things to talk about. I know we might run out of time, but a couple of sauces. One sauce, and don't let me forget this one because porchetta.
Porchetta. Yeah,
porchetta.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I looked it up what it was because it's actually featured on somebody's menu that we might get for takeout for this weekend.
Uh-huh.
Porchetta is pork belly.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically rolled.
Rolled. With, roasted.
What is the pollen that is used for a classic?
Sometimes people put pollen in it. I don't think it's an important distinction.
Do you remember what kind of pollen?
It's all about the pork. It's all about the pork.
Yeah, but do you remember what kind of pollen?
I don't.
There's some kind of pollen that it's, and so I was just intrigued by that because
I mean, I've had it with mushroom pollen. I've had it or mushroom dusting. Like sometimes you'd make almost like a, what's the word? A duxelle and put that inside. Like you would put in a Wellington.
Yeah, I was intrigued by the pollen, and apparently it's mm-hmm. expensive, and that's why a lot of people don't use it.
Yeah.
And I've never experienced the flavor of it, but I became intrigued by it. Anyway, back to my sauces.
Mm-hmm.
So these were given to me. Now, Genovese, I'm sure you've made that.
Hello. My mother's family is from Genoa, so we are Genovese.
Okay. I did not realize. Now, I know this is also a guy who has, these are recipes that he gave me from, these are from his like grandmother's recipes.
So is this, your client's father? The one that you talked to about the pasta with the ricotta?
It's my client's,
father-in-law.
Mother's husband.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
good. So you spoke to him. So he's Genovese?
Yeah.
I love it. This is awesome.
Yeah.
So do you remember when you told me about the dish with the ricotta? And I said, that sounds like I thought he was Northern Italian.
Right.
Because that creaminess is something my grandmother would have.
Yeah. Cool. And I didn't realize. Now I've heard of this sauce, this Genovese sauce, but I didn't realize there's no potato involved. I mean, there's no tomato involved. And then it's basically like a slow-cooked meat sauce.
Yeah, it's like a bolognese.
Right, but there's no tomato product in this.
Uh-huh.
Is that how you guys would make it?
Yeah. I mean, I put a teeny little bit of tomato product in my bolognese, but it's, you know, it's negligible. It's not the important part.
So it calls for, you want to brown your 4 pounds of top sirloin or sirloin tip roast very well on all sides. Add 3 pounds, 3 pounds,
uh-huh.
a bag of onions chopped.
Yep.
Cook until the onions are tender and well browned around the edges. Add diced carrots, celery stalks, chopped prosciutto,
mm-hmm.
parsley. And enough water halfway cover the veggies and the meat, salt and pepper. Simmer on low for about an hour and a half. Turn the meat and cook for an hour and a half.
Okay, so time out. I'm surprised. There's no mushrooms in there?
No.
Huh. So a traditional Genoese has porcini mushrooms in it, dried porcini mushrooms.
Okay.
Everything else is pretty much the same, but it's definitely dried porcinis that you would rehydrate. You would squeeze them, you'd use the broth, but very carefully because there's a lot of sand at the bottom when you're rehydrating. So far it sounds...
Yeah, I wonder why people would do... Maybe this particular family wasn't fond of mushrooms and they just left it out.
If you're from Genoa, you're fond of mushrooms.
Yeah. So you continue to cook the sauce on high flame until it dries out mm-hmm. about an hour or so. So you have to, you keep stirring it and stirring it and stirring it. And apparently you're just left with, they say at this point you can actually refrigerate it overnight.
Right.
Then you're going to add red wine and cook until it's absorbed in the sauce about another hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It just sounds very simple, but it does take a long time.
Yeah, it's not. Yep, exactly. And what's interesting is, so the traditional, that sauce, and it pretty much the same with the addition of mushrooms, is called Toco. It's okay. T-O-C-C-O. And when we were growing up, my grandmother, whenever we would have a roast, which basically every Sunday my grandparents would come and my parent, you know, they would have a roast and I would always eat the end because I don't like really red meat. We would sop up the juices from the roast with a piece of bread and we would call it toco. And I believe that is from that sauce. So it's basically, it was like a saying sauce was saying toco.
Okay.
But a traditional Genoese sauce is a toco.
All right.
Yeah. But generally, it usually has porcinis in it because it's porcini land in Genoa.
And this one's called Virginia's Tuscan Chicken.
Uh-huh.
And it's put thin slices of onion, about an onion per person, in a pot with oil. Brown the onions for about 10 minutes. Add the chicken and brown it. Mm-hmm. Turn it several times. Keep the flame kind of high. Add a half a glass of balsamic vinegar, olives, and capers. Huh. Cook the chicken for 20 minutes.
Sounds like a lot of vinegar.
It sounds like a lot of vinegar, right?
I mean, it's the acidity is going to, you know, it's going to burn off like a wine would. You know, you're going to lose some of that, but sounds like a lot.
Right.
Sounds good. It sounds like the beginning of sort of a cacciatore with everything else in there, or a Livernaise sauce.
I've kind of compared it. I mean, totally different method here and a few variations, but a similar feeling of chicken marbella.
Yeah, similar.
The vinegar and the,
yep.
But anyway, these are just basic stuff. I love when people, you know, people give me their grandmother's recipe.
Absolutely. And that's why I was interested to know where, when you told me that recipe of his with the ricotta, I was interested to know where he was from. That's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah. So
we have to make sure you tell him that I'm also Genoese.
Okay. I will.
Maybe tell him about my grandmother's pesto that has more parsley and cream cheese. I wonder if, you know, if his family's from Genoa, they know that sometimes also it would be served over pasta, but it would have small potatoes or small green beans. That's like super traditional with the pesto.
Okay.
Yeah. Very cool.
So yeah. So back to porchetta for just, I mean, I keep saying cheddar.
Porchetta.
Porchetta.
There's no H.
I understand that, but I'd say, like, we say pancetta, and I'm saying porchetta.
But there's no H in that either.
Right.
Yeah.
But pancetta, you say pancetta.
Right.
And porchetta, you say porchetta.
Right.
Correct? Okay. So I'm still curious about experiencing this pollen thing. Like, what is... Why did they decide that a pollen was going to be used?
Well, it depends on when it's from. I mean, historically, we didn't have extracts. You know, pollen was something that was used as an extract. You know, it was something that was dehydrated and then shredded or ground, like with a mortar and pestle. So it's just getting the flavor of something without adding that something whole.
Right.
So
I thought it'd be interesting, and I'm, you know, I'm a huge fan of pork belly, so how could I not like it? So this is on a menu that's being provided by the Canal House in Milford, New Jersey, and they do it like a Sunday dinner.
Nice.
And so it's a bunch of courses, and the porchetta that they're doing, they're serving on polenta of some sort, and there's also, of course, there's a cannelloni course, and there's a salad course, and there's a dessert for, you know, it's all like $62 a head. So I think we're going to go for it.
That sounds great.
But I would also like to do, I haven't not worked with pork belly as much as I would love to. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's something that I get. If I see pork belly on a menu and as an appetizer, I'm going to get it.
Right.
But I haven't been out to dinner in over a year.
I know.
So it's like, you know, I've got to, if I want a craving for something, I've got to make it, but I don't really necessarily want to have a giant slab of pork belly in my refrigerator. But
so the in the Stockton market, there used to be an Italian butcher there, and he would make a porchetta. And it doesn't always have to be pork belly. It can also just be a pork roast.
Right.
But he used to do one every week with a ton of herbs in it, and he would layer, you know, some vegetables in it. It was delicious. I mean, it's all you could smell in the Stockton farmer's market was his pork roasting.
Did we had some of that, I remember.
Yeah, we did. Exactly.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.